is my advice. Bless. The reporters took photographs of the two of us together. They bombarded me with questions for their articles. Thanks to Claude's tremendous efforts, my concept was going to be in all the papers. This was more than a helping hand. It was a trampoline. As the evening was drawing to a close, Claude came up to me. I grabbed him for a hug. I owed him so much. Claude, I don't know how to thank you for all you've done for me.
I'm delighted at your success, Camille, and I'm very proud of you. I think you deserve this.
He held out to me the famous little box, this time wrapped in a golden ribbon. I could guess at once what it contained. The Black Lotus, the last of my talismans. My eyes filling with tears all over again, I kissed him and added the charm to the ones I had already received.
I have to go now, he said. Once again, my congratulations.
Before leaving, he slipped a small white envelope into the palm of my hand. I opened it after he had gone. The paper inside read,
My dear Camille, please allow me to arrange one final meeting with you. I have a few things to tell you, and then my mission with you will be complete. You will be able to continue on your way in the knowledge that you are on the right path. Meet me the day after tomorrow at 2 p.m. on top of the Arc de Triomphe. Bravo once again, and good night from your devoted Claude.
What surprise did he have in store for me this time? 34. So, I was to meet him on the top of the Arc de Triomphe. By now, I knew Claude and his love of metaphors. What better place for this rendezvous to mark the end of his mission with me? There was no doubting that his teaching had been a triumph. But given his modesty and the care he had taken to emphasize my progress and accomplishments, rather than his success as a mentor, I suspected he wanted to celebrate my triumph, which was visible both in so many small ways in my daily life and in much bigger things, of which Fashion Fairies was the prime example. I walked up to the monument, admiring the impressive sculptures, allegories of victory, adorning its arches. Yes, really, what better place to celebrate the successful conclusion of my personal project and to pay homage to the brilliant counseling that Claude had offered. Head held high, my eyes glinting with pride, I passed by the tomb of the unknown soldier and felt a similar flame burn inside me. When I reached the top of the arch, I looked down at life going on beneath me. All those tiny dots rushing in every direction, the cars the size of toys, passers-by like colored pixels. The wind was ruffling my hair, and I breathed deeply, inhaling the air of freedom and ambition that seemed to envelop this place so redolent of history and conquest. Claude was already there and welcomed me with open arms.
Claude, I'm so pleased to see you.
Me too, Camille. So, have you recovered from the other night?
Oh yes, it was marvelous. Thank you again for all you have done, and to bring Jean-Paul Gaultier along with you. That was miraculous. I still don't know how you managed to pull it off.
Ah, that's my little secret. But you know, if your concept hadn't appealed to him, he wouldn't have come. So the credit is all yours. Have you seen all the plaques on this monument, Camille? Magnificent, aren't they? I couldn't think of a better spot to round off this mission. All these symbols of victory, liberty, peace, that's what you've achieved, thanks to your own efforts, your strength of will, and all the positive changes you've brought about in your life.
I would never have done it without you.
Everyone needs a guide sometimes, and I'm pleased to have been able to help you.
Both of us fell silent for a moment, staring at the extraordinary panorama we could see from the top of the arch.
You know, Camille, I like to think we are all citizens of the world, but few people are aware of it. Anyone could become a peace ambassador simply by working on his or her own inner serenity and happiness. Just imagine the impact if more and more people chose the virtuous circle rather than the vicious one.
That's true. And it's why I'm so pleased I'm back in the good circle. You taught me so much. Even if your mission on my behalf is over, I sincerely hope we'll continue to see each other.
Silence.
Claude? His face had suddenly clouded over.
Maybe when you've heard what I have to say, you won't want to see me again.
What are you talking about?
I have to tell you a secret that might destroy your faith in me.
Now you're frightening me.
Okay, so here goes.
I stared at him, willing him to go on.
I am not a routinologist.
I was dumbstruck.
What? In real life, I'm an architect. I designed the house you stumbled into the day of the storm. I'd always dreamed of being a great architect, but 15 years ago I was lost, a fat, depressed, middle-aged guy with no future. In those days I lived in the United States. I was a waiter in a pizzeria, light years away from achieving my dreams. I put on 45 pounds. I ate because I had been hurt, and the wound had not healed, all because of a love story that ended badly.
Claude was struggling to speak, and I could tell from his face how painful that episode must have been for him. He went on.
I had left France after a disastrous breakup with a woman I thought was the love of my life. It was brutal. She went off with my best friend. Their betrayal almost destroyed me. We were about to start the third year of our architecture degree, and were planning to get married when we finished. But there was no way I could stay after what happened. I felt I had to get as far away as possible, to abandon everything, including my professional future, and forget her. To put an ocean between us was the least I could do. But when I got to the States, my depression only got worse. I completely let myself go. I was huge.
A memory suddenly clicked in my brain. I exclaimed, "So that man in the photo was you?"
It was his turn to not understand. I had to explain how I'd found the photo in the drawer in his study.
"Yes, that was me, all right. The other man is Jack Miller. He's the one who looked after me and set me back on track, so that I could become what I am today. Without him, I would never have returned to architecture. I no longer had any confidence in myself. He was my mentor, my routinologist."
"What do you mean, your routinologist?" The wind tousled his salt and pepper hair. His eyes shone. He sighed deeply, then clearly decided to tell me everything.
"Camille, the moment has come for me to explain. Routinology, as such, is an invention. In reality, it's a kind of mutual aid chain, a way of passing on success. Whoever has been helped becomes a routinologist in turn, and has to choose another person to help and pass on everything he or she has learned. But, that's not possible. It can't be true."
"But it is."
"What about your office, your assistant, and that young woman who said she had been counseled by you?"
"All that was staged. In fact, that office is my architectural practice, and Marianne is my assistant there. I had to take her into my confidence and convince her to play along. The woman who agreed to say she was a former client is in fact my great niece. The only other things I had to do whenever you came were to remove anything that could give away my real profession and leave out a few fake routinology files."
"So that was why there was a design for a house with the calculations and a heap of papers?"
He nodded silently, watching me to see how I would react.
"That means you really have no qualifications to be my life coach. No track record." He coughed. This was the first time I had ever seen him lose his composure.
"Yes and no, Camille. You see, each new routinologist has, like you, been through an apprenticeship that he then follows scrupulously. It worked for you, didn't it?"
I sensed that he was waiting for some sort of absolution from me. I wasn't yet completely ready to give it. I was going to have to digest all this first. He must have read my mind, because he went on.
You mustn't think I don't know what you're feeling, Camille. It was a shock for me as well to learn that Jack Miller wasn't a routineologist. It's true that it isn't a classic method, or even an orthodox one, but it's worth it, don't you think? We stared at each other. An intense silence hung in the air while he waited for my answer. I capitulated. Yes, it's worth it. Claude breathed again. Smiling, he rummaged in his bag and pulled something out.
In that case, you're ready to have this.
He handed me a thick notebook. In it, I discovered all the stages of my program, the exercises, the learning tasks, the detailed instructions. I was deeply moved to see page after page covered with notes, diagrams, photos. What an impressive collection.
I've been keeping it for you throughout your journey. It will be very useful later on in helping the man or woman you choose to mentor. And by the way, it will only take a look or a word for you to know who that person is.
Is that what happened in my case?
Yes. I'd been waiting for 4 years to find someone I wanted to mentor like this.
I was stunned and flattered at the same time. He gave me a box of routineologist business cards, printed in my name, as if he had never doubted I would agree, and some bogus files, photos and letters of thanks that I was supposed to pin to the wall of my future consulting room, the whole paraphernalia of being a routineologist.
Here you are. Take them, please. It's your turn to pass on all you have learned.
You will do that, won't you?
You won't allow the chain of routineologists to break.
There was a pleading note to his voice. I was stunned. He was still staring at me insistently. My mind was filled with all that we had been through together. I was choking with emotion. I held out my hand and took the papers. I owed him that at least, didn't I? 35. The raindrops crashing against my windshield grew larger and larger. The wipers creaked and shuddered, yet I was totally calm, despite the rain, the mist, the gridlocked traffic, and the red pool of light that the tail lights spread through the night. For the first time in my life, I felt completely at peace. Aligned, as Claude would have said. Gone were the days when life tossed me about like a leaf caught in a violent storm. I was continually amazed at my own inner resources. I felt I was connected to a force whose existence I had not even suspected until now. I felt ready to confront whatever life threw at me. At last, I had learned to take hold of the reins of my life, and I was never going to let them go. Around me, stuck at the traffic lights in their metal boxes, all I could see were gloomy, angry, weary faces. I felt like winding down my windows and shouting Claude's instructions on how to be happy at the top of my voice. Instead, I made do with smiling blissfully while I waited for the lights to change. Green. I accelerated away, keen to get the traffic moving. Just then, a vehicle jumped the red light and smashed into me. Blackout. Soon afterward, the sound of sirens.
Oh, what a handsome fireman, I told myself as I was being lifted from my car.
He took me over to the fire engine and sat me down to recover from the shock. A few moments later, a woman flung open the door, the woman who'd crashed into me. She began to babble apologies at me, crying, groveling, saying how stupid she had been, how useless she was, how hopeless. I listened without interrupting. There was no point in me saying anything, even if I had wanted to. When it all has to come out, it all has to come out. Neither of us was hurt, apart from a few bruises and scratches. More of a fright than any injury. In spite of this, she could not forgive herself for having caused the accident. Once we had given statements to the police and dealt with the rest of the formalities, we moved our cars to the side of the road to free the route. Our insurance companies would take them away soon enough. To recover from the cold and shock, I suggested to my still apologizing road rammer that we go for a hot chocolate while waiting for the tow trucks.
She seemed both grateful and incredulous that I should be so kind to her. Now she could not thank me enough. I didn't mind the verbal avalanche. The poor woman really seemed at the end of her tether. We ordered our hot chocolates. Viennese for me because I needed the comfort of that little dollop of chantilly. I could see the woman's lower lip start to tremble, and I sensed she was on the brink of confiding in me things she had bottled up for far too long. I laid my hand on her forearm to encourage her. "Don't worry," I said. "It's not that serious. Besides, my insurers are getting to know me. I used them only a few months ago. Seeing how much we pay them, it's just as well they have something to do." Tears began to well in the corners of her large, distressed eyes.
Thank you. You're so kind.
In your place, I think I would have gone berserk.
That wouldn't have done much good. I'm so, so sorry.
I don't know what's happening to me lately. Nothing is going right. My nerves are in tatters. I feel like chucking it all in. And now this. Today has been just appalling. It's too much.
She broke down in a torrent of sobs. This started me thinking. My heart began to race. Had the moment come? She's the one, I thought, feeling quite emotional myself. Would I be up to it? Unconsciously, I sat up straighter in the bistro armchair and took a deep breath before I plunged my hand into my coat pocket and began to stroke the little piece of card I found there.
"What's your name?"
I asked her.
"Isabel."
I held out my card.
"Here, Isabel. Take this. The thing is, I might be able to help you."
She snatched my business card with the incredulous expression of someone who found it hard to believe anyone could do anything for her.
"I'm a routinologist."
"A routine what?"
Pocket Dictionary of Routinology Words and Phrases. Act as if. The mental technique of acting as if consists in behaving as if the situation bothering you or the thing you have to do that least appeals to you were the most exciting activity in the world. Live at 400% rather than drifting along. Do not sit around waiting for change to drop into your lap. Amorous creativity. Dare to be creative. Brainstorm loving ideas. And jot down all of them following the principle of crossed out C, QFM. Crossed out C, no censorship or criticism. Q, for quantity, produce the maximum amount of ideas. F, for fantasy, note down even the most ridiculous and improbable suggestions. M, for multiplication, one idea leads you to think of another. Whether you write inventive, love letter texts, or find unusual places to meet to surprise your loved one, creative thinking will always be your greatest ally in the battle against routine. Art of modeling yourself. This involves finding role models among celebrities or fictional characters, people whom you admire for a certain quality or aspect of their lives. Like Camille, you can list them. "I'd like to have the wisdom of a Gandhi, the calm of a Buddha, etc." And make a collage of their photos and hang it somewhere where you will see it regularly. Or you can imagine that you are such and such a person and act accordingly so as to gain self-confidence. Choose the best from your mentors, attitudes, behavior, philosophy, and construct your own template for success. Be a cat. You can be a cat by allowing yourself a moment that is entirely yours, a peaceful, calm moment anchored in the here and now. You will be able to stretch, yawn, let your ideas float like a soft meditation. Being a cat is simply to be happy being, without the pressure of doing. Deep breathing. 2 or 3 times a day, make time to do some deep breathing. Sit down, relax your body, loosen your jaws by opening your mouth slightly.
Breathe in for a count of four. Hold your breath for two. Breathe out for four. Hold it for two. You will gradually increase your breathing capacity and will be able to breathe at a rate of eight. Breathe for eight. Hold for four. 12. Breathe for 12. Hold for six. Or 16. Breathe for 16. Hold for eight. Note, exhaling is all important because the more completely you breathe out, the more you fill your lungs with new air. This supply of oxygen will refresh your entire body, not to mention your brain. Dramatic triangle. This is a principle that describes the three symbolic roles we play in turn, more or less consciously, in a negative relationship, that of victim, persecutor, or savior. There's never a good way to resolve this triangle, apart from quitting the game. Elastic bands. The elastic bands of the past are events that have affected you, but that you do not realize are still influencing you in the present. Situations in your current life can reopen those wounds, and in spite of yourself, release an emotional charge out of proportion to the event unleashing them. In order to live the present more fully, you need to identify these elastic bands and to cut them, first by recognizing their existence, then by doing something about them. For example, working on repressed anger from the past, or incomplete mourning, either through writing therapy or by seeing a counselor. Empathy, wet and dry. Wet empathy is when you take on board another person's problems and absorb their negative emotions. This will only lead to you feeling bad as well. Dry empathy is when you listen at a distance, so you can understand and sympathize with the problems of those around you, but you are not contaminated by all the negative vibes. It is a useful shield to protect yourself. Feeding your rats. You feed your rats if you encourage that part of you that likes to complain and play the victim. What you need to do is stop feeding them and become aware of how this negativity nurtures fear and opens up secret wounds. This will make you less vulnerable because you are surer of yourself. Feet. When you find yourself in a tense or hurtful situation, rather than reach for your reproach machine gun, express your grievances clearly and calmly. To do that, remind your interlocutor of the facts that upset you. Then express your emotion, how this made you feel. Encourage the other person by suggesting a way out. Then propose a truce by pointing out how things could improve, creating a win-win situation for both sides. Imaginary camera. To use your imaginary camera and modify your perception filter, you must go in search of beauty. Focus your attention on pleasant and joyful things in the street, on public transport, wherever you go. This will help you build up a catalog of positive inner images that will be really helpful in reprogramming your brain to be more positive also. Inner catalog of positive images and memories. This goes hand in hand with your imaginary camera. You create a mental photo album of pleasant, peaceful moments that you can recall regularly to rediscover those good vibes. This reinforces a healthy mindset and a positive view of the world. Inner dialogue. To change your inner dialogue for the better, there is a proven technique. Every morning in front of the mirror, repeat positive statements about yourself. Even if you do not yet entirely believe them, your brain will hear and register them. This will boost well-being and help restore a positive self-image. Inner smile. The masters of Tao taught the art of the inner smile, or the art of regaining inner harmony, a guarantee of health, happiness, and longevity. This is a state of well-being created by regular relaxation and deep breathing exercises. The inner smile also encompasses the capacity to accept others, to show them and yourself sympathy generosity, and love. Once you attain this state of mind, you will attain, in the familiar term, inner peace. List of positive experiences and good qualities. Draw up a list of the major experiences in your past that illustrate your successes, your good qualities and capabilities. This will let you focus on the positive areas of your life or personality, and so help your self-esteem. Mission: spring clean. This involves cleaning inside and out. Cleaning inside means you identify everything that seems toxic to you or negative, or that gets in the way of your relationship with others, the way you organize your life or your environment. Like Camille, you can write a list of I no longer want. Cleaning outside means looking at your lifestyle to see how it can be improved, from getting rid of useless or damaged things to sorting your possessions out and throwing away what you don't want or need. Tidying, redecorating. Moments of gratitude. Each day, think about everything that has been positive, from the least significant to the most. A delicious early morning cup of coffee. The great joy of a personal triumph. And say thank you. Positive anchoring. This is a technique that will put you in a receptive mood. In other words, in a favorable physical and mental state. How? By reactivating the sensations you felt at a happy moment in your life. To do this, you need to create an anchor. In a calm place, visualize the happy moment you wish to recall and associate it with a word, image, or gesture. With training, you will be able to recover the anchor by reproducing the gesture or word, or by recalling the associated image, and thus rediscover the desired emotional state. Positive notebook. This is a book in which you note down, in alphabetical order, your successes and joys, both large and small. How? For each letter of the alphabet, think of keywords that suggest significant positive moments. For example, A for Adrienne, the happy times spent with your child. L for love, your most beautiful romantic moments. M for Marbella, somewhere that reminds you of a memorable holiday. Or martial arts. Perhaps you won a medal, and remembering it makes you proud. Describe your memory as precisely as possible. The surroundings, the people involved, and also outline your physical and emotional response. Positive thoughts and attitudes. Your words give off vibes. So does your physical attitude. Both of them greatly influence your mindset, and therefore your reality. That is why it is good to adopt positive thoughts and posture. Stand upright rather than hunched. Smile rather than scowl. See the positive in everything, instead of complaining and becoming discouraged. Train yourself to look on the bright side. When you speak, make it sound positive and not negative. Use the active form of verbs rather than the passive. To say, I'll never do it in time, is not the same as saying, I face up to difficulties by getting organized and mobilizing my resources. It's up to you. Power songs. Download a playlist of music that makes you feel as if you have wings. Promises notebook. This notebook is for you to write down the objectives you have set for yourself and the promises you have made to yourself, to help you remain fully committed to your resolutions, and make sure you tick off each one as it is accomplished. Remember that the most important thing is not to know what needs to be done, but to do it. Just do it. Red card. This is a small signal you can agree on with your partner, or child, to warn them that an argument is brewing. It is like a red warning light in a car. This can help avoid aggression taking hold. Reproach machine gun. This is the weapon we use when we start our sentences with a you of reproach. You never think about. You plonk yourself in front of your computer without asking me if. This is strictly forbidden because it always ends with us caught up in a spiral of aggression. Best to learn to express your grievances with an I. SMART method. This will help you to find the goals you wish to achieve and give you the greatest chance of achieving them. You need to ensure that your objective is specific, clearly defined, and adapted. Measurable, so you can assess when the goal is achieved. Attainable, defined in a realistic way, divided into a series of accessible goals. It should not be the unreachable star. Realistic. In order to stay motivated, your objective should match your capabilities. And timely. You need to set yourself a deadline. Steam off stamps. This means that you dare to say what is troubling you, and you express your feelings as soon as there is any unease or conflict, whether this is latent or not. This will help you avoid any pressure cooker explosions. Swear jar. This is your anti-wallowing kitty. Make your swear jar out of a jam jar or similar. The idea is that each time you catch yourself wallowing in negative thoughts, you put money in the jar. The whole family can join in. Theory of small steps. This theory tells us that it is advisable to see the process of change as a series of small steps, small transformations, rather than an enormous mountain that has to be scaled in one go. This makes it seem less daunting, and the result will be even more rewarding. Discussion Guide. A conversation with Raphael Jordino. Discussion Guide. 1. Why do you think Camille feels as if her life is missing something at the beginning of the novel? Do you relate to her character? Why or why not? 2. Why does Camille decide to go with Claude's unorthodox therapy? Would you have called him? Why or why not? 3. Have you ever had a case of routinitis? What helped you to climb out of your rut? What strategies from the novel would you try in your own life? 4. Claude says, the capacity for being happy has to be worked on, built up day by day. Do you agree with him? How do you think you could start building this capacity in your own life? 5. Claude teaches Camille the theory of small steps, asking her to start by listing out everything she'd like to change in her life. What are the top 3 things you want to change in your own life? 6. Claude reminds Camille that many people know what they're supposed to do to lead a happy life, but never really put it into practice. Do you think that's true? What do you think might be holding people back? 7. What would you say are your top 3 successes in your life? Why do you think these 3 achievements mean so much to you? What could you do to create similar success in the next year of your life? 8. What do you think about Claude's elastic band theory? Have you seen this play out in your own life? 9. Do you have a role model? If so, who is it? What is it you admire about them? What is one thing you could do tomorrow to emulate these qualities? 10. Think back on the past few days in your life. What things would you list in your positive notebook? 11. Claude teaches Camille to anchor herself in a positive memory. Have you ever tried this exercise before? How do you think it might change your perspective? What anchor would you choose for yourself? 12. Were you surprised by the novel's ending? A conversation with Raphael Jordino. What inspired you to write this novel? I've been carrying Camille's story with me for a long time. The book isn't autobiographical, but just like Camille, I also experienced an important turning point in my life, specifically right after my experience working as the creative director of a communications agency in Paris, where I was having a rather difficult time. That experience drove me to leave the business world and put myself first. I decided to take the road less traveled and to throw myself into a much more artistic lifestyle. Though it was less stable, it felt like it fit who I was and my most important life aspirations. Over the past 10 to 15 years, I've done a lot of searching and reflecting about who I was, who I am, and who I want to be in my life. I've experimented and thought a lot about different techniques people can use to go about achieving their wildest dreams. It takes a lot of creativity. My life experience made it easy for me to write Camille's story, because I understand the twists and turns that happen on the road to transformation. While Your Second Life Begins When You Realize You Only Have One is your first novel, you've published nonfiction books before. What was different about writing fiction? Writing fiction feels much more fluid than writing nonfiction. I used to be a graphic designer, so I'm a very visual person. So when I write this type of story, I have to use metaphors and I have to make my writing really visual. That's what feels natural to me. The title, Your Second Life Begins When You Realize You Only Have One, is so fun. How did you come up with it? In a lot of the creative fields, you do group brainstorming. It was actually my son's father who came up with the title after some brainstorming and internet searches. Both of us used to work in publicity in creative fields, so we're trained to come up with titles, slogans, and catchy phrases. We find these phrases through word associations, doing what I call a creative sweep. You just let your brain go in every possible direction and try to find something interesting. He came up with the title while searching for themes related to happiness, this moment where we really start living. He found a quote from Confucius that fit the book perfectly, but was a little too long. Once I had the quote, the hard part was modifying and shortening it. Camille is an utterly charming and relatable narrator. Is she inspired by anyone you know? How much do you have in common with her? Camille was a spokeswoman for my ideas. It's funny, I'm Camille, but I'm also Claude, and I switch between the two. Both characters help me deliver the messages that I wanted to get across to my readers. I do have a lot in common with Camille, and so do other people I know. I've had periods in my life when I suffered from routinitis, when I felt like I needed to be living a deeper and fuller romantic and professional life. Many of us have a lot in common with Camille, myself especially, having a path that wasn't totally straightforward. We have more than one life to live within the life we are given. It's rare in this day and age to continue doing the same thing for your entire life. We have to ask ourselves questions when we have Camille moments. I've definitely felt the way she does in the book. I left a professional situation that wasn't working for me. I reinvented my life. I started living the life that I wanted to live. I started writing books, and though it felt risky, I stuck with it, and it worked out. How did you come up with the diagnosis of routinitis? Have you ever had a case of routinitis? It's true that I invented the word. It doesn't actually exist. Making up words is something I learned to do when I worked in publicity. To answer the second part of the question, I have definitely gone through periods when I felt like I wasn't achieving my potential or my dreams. It was awful. I hung on and did a lot of reflection. Then I spent years creating the life I have now. I wanted to share what I learned from that process with my readers, share what really helped me get on this path. The book isn't just me babbling. This is what, in my experience, actually worked to escape an unfulfilling life and start living a life of meaning. In your past, you ran a company that organizes events focused on stress management, team and relationship building, and finding creativity. How did you decide to do this work? How did this job and your background influence your novel? When I decided to leave the stability of my job at the communications agency, I knew I had to find a new job that would be interesting, but also would give me the time and space to reawaken my artistic side. Whether that was painting or writing, I needed a job that would give me time to create, follow my path, and figure out if I could actually pursue an artistic career. The stars aligned, as they sometimes do, leading me to discover this amazing career as a creative events planner, facilitating group team-building activities, making people work together creatively to strengthen motivation and creative potential. For example, forming connections among people by having them work together on a giant painted piece. It was perfect, because the work was fulfilling, but I sometimes didn't work more than 3 or 4 days per month. The rest of the time, I could work on my first books, which was where my real passion lay. So, how did that job influence the book? It allowed me to experiment and to prove that anything is possible. It's just a question of organization, of creating structures that will help you achieve your dreams. You just have to come up with some methods, and then, little by little, you can build a dream. So, I want my success today to be a testimony to perseverance, daring, and hard work. There is no magic spell, but hard work pays off, and it is possible to turn your dreams into reality. Claude teaches Camille many useful tricks for finding happiness and improving her life. How did you come up with these strategies? Are they strategies you've been taught, or did you invent any of them? Claude's advice is a mixture of advice I've heard and strategies I discovered when I was going through a difficult time about 14 years ago. I really needed to reinvent my life. So, yes, Claude's advice is based on existing techniques. But I adapted most of the real exercises somewhat, and then others I just made up, because that was the nature of my job. To mix the creative and the visual, like the imaginary camera, the positivity journal, and the goals folder. There are other true influences that show just beneath the surface, emotional intelligence and personality type, such as process communication, or MBTI, Myers-Briggs Type Indicator, in which I'm certified, transactional analysis, etc. Overall, I made up all of the events in the book, but I drew upon my true experiences. Parts of Claude are also based on my real-life routinologist, my mother, whose name is Claude. Claude is both a man's and a woman's name. Do you have a favorite challenge that Camille faces? Are you currently practicing any of her stages in your own life? Is there one challenge that you find hardest to enact for yourself? All of Camille's challenges are interesting. One that I like to do regularly is Operation Blank Space. It always does me so much good. You clean up your space and your mind at the same time. It's so helpful to surround yourself with beauty and make your environment into an inspiring place. I find that doing this regularly has really positive results. What's the most challenging, though it seems crazy, is letting yourself slow down, taking the time to relax. The more we have on our plates, the more important it is that we prioritize relaxation. Yes, it can be hard to make this relaxation happen, but especially when we're feeling overwhelmed by everything we have to do, we have to remember to pause. I always try to keep that in mind. Time spent relaxing, doing nothing, simply pausing, is never wasted time. We don't lose time, but we gain reality. It's extremely powerful. You're also known as an artist and a painter. Why do you think creativity is important? What's the first piece of advice you have for someone looking to bring more creativity into their own life? Creativity is one of the most amazing aspects of our existence. It's a state when we are free and connected to the child within us. It's a state, an energy, a spontaneity, and joie de vivre. I often try to access this state in my life. Honestly, it helps me time and time again in personal and professional situations. Creativity opens up the maximum amount of possibilities. When we feel like we are stuck in a box, creativity can help us find a way out, and there is always a way out. To develop your creativity, there are thousands of little things that you can do in your everyday life. You just have to train yourself. You should open up your spirit and always stay curious. You can keep a notebook and write about what you see, movies, art, plays, all the things that nourish your creativity. Training yourself to be creative means breaking out of your routines, taking new paths,
and trying things for the first time. Creativity is like a muscle, and over time, it will get stronger. We have to let go of our desire to always be perfect and to control everything. This stretches our minds and souls and gives us more and more access to that creative state. You live in Paris, France, but it's clear the novel has hit a nerve with readers all over the world. Why do you think Camille's story is so universally important? I think Camille's story is relevant to so many people because we all carry our childhood dreams with us, but sometimes we feel like we will never achieve them, and that can be heartbreaking. I think we all have a desire to make our lives as beautiful and impressive as they can be. So many people are caught in a kind of rat race, and they don't take the time to think, who am I? What is the meaning of my existence? We place so much value on material things, but if that is all we are working for, it becomes demoralizing, an existential crisis. It's so important to take the time to find ourselves. Why? Because what gives life meaning, as Socrates said, is knowing oneself. We have to look inside ourselves to know who we really are, because that's what will help us find ways of spending time that will allow us to give the best versions of ourselves to the world. We have to create our own definitions of success and happiness. You can't use your neighbor's definition. It is not egotistical to think this way. When we have the best possible energy, we can contribute the most beautiful parts of ourselves to the world. And that's an admirable goal. The idea of success is so subjective. It has nothing to do with who makes the most money or who has the most impressive career. Some of the greatest heroes are seemingly ordinary people who really touch the lives of others. People in need. People who they are close to. Their children. That's what's important. To have goals that are less material and more spiritual. That's what really counts as a beautiful life. A life full of achievements. A life full of happiness. This is Fiona Hardingham. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Your Second Life Begins When You Realize You Only Have One by Raphael Giordano. Translated from the French by Nick Kaster. This program was directed by Christina Rooney. Executive producer, Juliana Wilson. English translation copyright, 2018, by Nick Kaster. Published in the United States in 2018 by G.P. Putnam's Sons. First published in France in 2015 as Ta Deuxième Vie. Commence quand tu comprends. Katunon Akun. By Group Erol. Copyright 2015 by Group Erol. Production copyright 2018 Penguin Random House LLC. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.